This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. With cell phone cameras and small point-and-shoot cameras so accessible, almost anyone can consider themselves an amateur photographer these days. And with memory cards that have the ability to store thousands of photos, people are taking more pictures than ever before. But what does all this mean for photography as an art form, or from an historic preservation standpoint? Here to talk about digital photography are Jack Socha, a photography instructor and author based in La Crosse, and Linda Levinson, a UW La Crosse Associate Professor of Photography. Linda, maybe let's start with you. How did you first become interested in photography and make a career of it?
Well, I became interested in photography because my father took a lot of photographs, family photographs, and our lives were documented. I was fascinated with the ability to be able to see my life played out in photographs. And then I went to art school and I studied photography there.
And Jack, what about you? How did you become interested in photography?
I was babysitting for a relative, and along with giving me the $3 or $4 for doing it, this is like when I was in eighth grade, when Kennedy was still president, he gave me a little Kodak developing kit, and I developed my first roll of film in my room, and I was hooked.
Linda, do you remember some of your first photographs that you took?
I don't remember the first photographs I took, but I remember one photograph that I saw that I think really got me into the field of art and thinking about photography, which was an image from the Vietnam War of a soldier holding two decapitated heads. And from there, I realized the impact of photographs and the way they're distributed in our culture and the way we come to understand them.
Jack?
I love consumer technology. And, you know, I went from a roll film camera to getting my first 35 millimeter when I was in the Army stationed in Washington, D.C., and just documenting everything in D.C., and I just kept doing it. And then, of course, many years go by, and all of a sudden these digital cameras come out. And I had been doing tutorials and books on how to use your computer, and the digital camera is kind of joined at the hip to computers, and so it just naturally flowed into that. So I got a digital camera, and kept going. My first digital camera, by the way, used six AA batteries. It had no screen on the back. It did not zoom, and it did not focus. And from the time you took your first picture to the time you could take your second picture, it took 19 seconds to move the file into the card.
What does it mean for photography that anyone could be a photographer these days?
Well, I think that's raises a really interesting question, because I think as part of our culture, photography is now synonymous with our culture. Everybody's taking pictures. I know my students have taken them since they're 5 years old. They have a phone and they're taking photographs. So I think the definition, the role, and the way we understand photography is really in transition at the moment.
As a professor, someone who teaches photography, what is it like teaching students who have been taking pictures their whole lives?
At UWL, we actually, our photo one at this point is still the wet dark room. And so they learn about how the camera operates, how to make a print, what a negative is. But most students do not even know. Some of them have not even seen film, which is kind of hard to believe. So we start there, and they understand the process. They see how the camera works. We actually have a camera obscura in our photo area, and students actually get to see how the camera operates, which is really just a dark box with a hole and light comes in. So what I'm finding, though, is there's really disconnection between how the camera works and how their images are made. And there isn't any questioning of is how it's recording, what is the exposure correct, or what are the photographic properties of the image, like depth of field or motion or time.
Notice. And Jack?
In my classes, and my book, which is called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, is based on many, many, many classes. It's exactly the same thing. Some people come in with the idea that because it's digital, it's magic, and nothing can go wrong. And I tell them that the laws of physics haven't changed, that these people come in time and time again with a camera trying to take indoor sports photos like in a gymnasium of their kids shooting baskets, and they come out with motion and blurs and all these things. And when I try to explain to them why, that your aperture is too small, which means that your shutter speed is too slow, and maybe if you increase the ISO higher, you might get a better deal, their eyes glaze over. And I'm afraid that at this stage of the game, despite the fact that we have electronically enhanced cameras, not using chemical processes, when you get down to it and strip away all the modern gee whiz stuff, we're still taking pictures the same way Matthew Brady did during the Civil War.
You know, you bring up ISOs and shutter speeds and people's eyes glaze over, but
I mean, those same terms could have made people's eyes glaze over 50 years ago when there weren't digital photographs. And then, you know, I mean, you have to go through a photography class in order to learn those elements.
You need to know your limitations. Now, I mean, some of these little point-and-shoots that I pick up, and believe it or not, they're now secondhand in you know, thrift stores for $5 for a little 5-megapixel point-and-shoot. I tell people there's times when you want to be Ansel Adams and control everything in the photo, and there's times when you want to be Andy Warhol. And the good thing about most current digital cameras is, depending on how you set them, you can be either one. But we are so early in this game. Digital cameras, Professor, what, about 15 years they've been around roughly for consumers? Now, imagine, again, Matthew Brady in 1865 taking pictures, and then go fast forward 15 years. You still haven't even gotten into the 20th century. That's where we are now. I think we'll all be amazed what we're going to see 10 years from now.
I think it's not really even the camera that's at stake right now. It's the way that people are seeing and thinking. And our culture is more and more based on images. And, you know, you see people are communicating, our students are communicating through Facebook constantly through images. And they sit next to each other and send photographs to each other to communicate. We really need to break down what the photograph is and how to understand it and read it. So it seems that the research of the technology is really about resolution, but I don't know if that's really the aim of making images. I think the aim is really being able to start to see and understand what you're seeing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's a whole separate thing. I teach the nuts and bolts so people can set their cameras correctly. A professor is showing them how to see and how to explore and to think outside the box, which is really important, because it's one thing to you have to know the limitations of what your camera can do. If you're trying to do, you know, shots of eagles on the bluff or whatever, you're not going to use the little camera I was carrying with me today. And they need to understand that. It's just like if you were going to go play golf. You can't just pick up a golf club at a secondhand sale and go play golf. You got to learn everything. There's a certain discipline required, both before you take the picture with the camera and again, what you do after the picture is taken that hasn't existed before. There's no shoebox full of negatives anymore. There's no Nerf camera that makes everything perfect. And it's going to be a problem because people do and can lose the pictures they took because they don't quite know file management and things like that. It's a whole different world of dealing with your camera. In the old days, you could, you know, even if it was a 4x5 view camera, you had to learn how to dust off the holder and insert the film and make sure it was put in correctly. But then again, also was the Instamatic. We could drop in the cartridge and didn't worry about it. But in either case, you had to match what you were shooting with the cameras you were using.
I've been thinking about digital photography editing a bit too, because that's evolved. You can get free programs on the internet. Anyone with a little bit of time can learn some of the basics of Photoshop. Even on online programs like Instagram, you can put a filter on to make look like your picture was taken in 1962. Are these programs really changing photography today?
I just think it makes it easier to make it look a certain way. In fact, you know, and some filters kind of evens out any harshness and makes it much more seductive and look good and make people look good or they think they look good.
I dabbled briefly with the zone system, which was this incredibly complicated thing where you had to measure the light in the image, develop the film to a specific, you know, time based on your exposures, and then make your print based on it. And I actually had a calculator called the zone systemizer that tried to do this for you. Now you can open up many programs, including Photoshop Elements or whatever, and you can actually click where you want the darkest place to be and click where you want the lightest place to be, and it shifts the tones. So you can now do things that would have been either terribly difficult or terribly expensive only a few years ago. I think that's one big thing why there's this explosion in interest. You can take pictures for free now.
Yeah, it's immediate gratification, but it doesn't necessarily make the photographs any more interesting. I think editing really deals with context and what your ideas are and where your images are going to be going as to how you want to edit them. And that, you know, a program is not going to do that for you. The person, the mind, has to do that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about digital photography. My guests are Linda Levinson, a UW La Crosse Associate Professor of Photography, and Jack Socha, a photography instructor and author based in La Crosse. We've been talking a bit about this shift from film photography to digital photography over the last 10, 15 years or so. And Jack, as you mentioned before, it's becoming more of a computer industry. Let's talk about this move to the computer industry, maybe.
I tell my students, and I say in the book, that the photo industry has been taken over by the computer industry, that basically your digital camera is a computer with a lens attached to it. And that in the computer industry, at least in the past 10, 15 years, their idea of a really long time is 18 months. And so you have to be very careful and really think ahead and have a strategy to save your photos for future generations. And that's something that, quite frankly, most people are not quite prepared to deal with right now.
I know a lot of film photographers who've been photographing for 40 years have switched to digital because it's easier in a lot of aspects, and they really like it. They can make the prints at home without going into a darkroom, having to have sink and ventilation. So a lot of ways, you know, the technology is shifting, but it's actually has been very helpful to people that have worked with film. Also, what's interesting with it, as the technology shifts, and since we're always in a state of change with this technology, is that I see a lot of people coming back to early photographic processes, like hand-coding paper, cyanotypes, or gum bichromate printing, platinum palladium printing, the pinhole camera now. My students are doing pinhole photography, which is just a hole in a box, light-type box to make images. So I think it's interesting as we move more technologically advanced, so we think we are, that people are still interested in the early photographic ways of making images.
And there are now products on the market, and I have several, that are adapters for single-lens reflex cameras to put old lenses. I have a pinhole device for my digital SLR.
Oh, yeah, you can just take a lens cap and put a hole in it,
yeah,
and make it a pinhole camera.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then I've got there's a kind of a toy camera called a Holga that is being used in some areas for fine art photography, and they now make that lens that will fit on your digital SLR. There's all kinds of adapters you can put on, and if you're kind of old school like me, I mean, I've got a 1967 East German portrait lens, which I put on my digital SLR, and it's amazing what you can do.
Yeah, and they have something called Lens Baby, too, where you can do tilts and shifts with a regular camera. Normally, that's just for a 4x5 or a large format camera. But I think what's interesting now, and even if you see it in like the environmental movement, things that were important or sort of on the outside in the 70s, 60s, 70s are now coming full circle now, except now they're marketed better. So for a ton of photographic processes, there are kits now that you can make. There's more information on the internet so people can learn how to use them, just like solar energy and all of the energies that were starting to come, people starting to play with in the 60s and 70s are now at the forefront of our consciousness.
Film photography will never fully disappear. There's always going to be a niche for it.
As long as they can afford to make the film, yeah. And there are some environmental concerns because dissolved silver, which is, you know, what comes out of film when you develop it, is really nasty stuff and has to be kept out of the environment.
But then we have all these toner tanks
that's
have
true
to be recycled,
too. Yeah, exactly. So this may be why we're all looking at things on iPads now. I don't really know. There are people I know who they don't expect to see pictures on paper.
Well, that's interesting, too, because our students, when I teach them, they only see images on screens. Hmm. So they don't know the edge of an image. They don't know how it's framed. And when you print it out, they accept the color as it's printed. It's given to them. They don't question it because they don't question if the monitor is accurate or not or if the print is accurate or not because they're not looking at color anymore. In fact, I think a lot of the digital cameras are just glorified snapshots very quickly. It's really educating people how to look and think about the photographs that they're making.
That's a very good point. Our professor is in a good place on this thing because there always will be snapshots of the family dog. And there's nothing wrong with that or having a bunch of people around a table over at Chuck E. Cheese. You know, they capture a slice of life. But if you are trying to express a particular emotion or something like that, you need to have command over the process, number one, so you know your resolution is set right, blah, blah, blah. But you also need to have an eye. And that's something that most people can learn and also experiment with different display methods. The photo is not just one thing. It's many different things. And this is what our professor, I'm kind of jealous of the classes that she's teaching.
Linda Levinson is an associate photography professor at UW-La Crosse. Jack Socha is a photography instructor and author who lives in Spring Grove, Minnesota.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we continue our discussion about digital photography and the concerns that people are not printing off as many pictures as they used to. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers and photos by Jack and Linda can be found on our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. We continue our discussion about the good, the bad, and the realities of digital photography. UW La Crosse Associate Photography Professor Linda Levinson and author and photography instructor Jack Socha are our guests. Jack talks about concerns that people are not printing many of the photos that they are taking digitally these days.
I have concerns that the digitati out there, the computer people, whenever you tell them, well, what happens if you go to the store? I did an article for a magazine called Imaging probably 10 years ago where these kids went into Grandpa's trunk 50 years later and found a bunch of CDs of pictures. They took them to the local big box store, and it would be like me going to the local big box store right now with an Edison cylinder. You know, they wouldn't know what to do with it. And whenever I mention this to them, that what happens if there's no more USB ports and all your stuff was stored on a USB stick? I have a floptical disk at home that was a failed project from the dot-com boom. And I've got some CDs which were stored on the same spindle in the same place as all the rest, and some have delaminated, have holes through them due to whatever failed chemical reaction. They're gone. There's nothing you can do about it. So what these people always say is, well, you have to keep up with technology, and because it's digital, every time a new storage method comes along, you have to copy them all to the new thing.
Linda? Well, that brings up a really interesting point, too, because the migration of the technology is always changing. However, it can create new jobs, because somebody is going to have to be able to change that technology or keep it moving or keep it, you know, I don't know how interesting that job would be, but it's a job.
Sure. And there still are people who are taking your 8mm movies and putting them on DVDs. The trouble is that it ain't cheap. And a lot of people are going to say, well, I really don't want to keep all these pictures. And so they'll only maybe give them 10% of what they've got, and the rest will get lost. And for history and for families in the future, it's a challenge. It has not been resolved yet.
No, it hasn't. And I think it's interesting. You know, we have so many images now. We're glutted with photographs. And yeah, we may end up with none. And I think it's kind of interesting because people are still drawing. They're drawing things. And, you know, the irony might be that we might have taken all these photographs and they're stored, but what will be left is will be the drawings of people, the portraits of people, not the photographs.
And the occasional print they may have printed out, assuming it wasn't on an inkjet printer.
Right. And so people need to know, if you want to keep your photographs, you need to be able to print them with archival inks and archival papers so that they will last.
Can you just go to your average big box store and get that done?
Or? I don't know how big the box has to be. I know there are photographic stores that do sell archival photographic papers, and there are inks you can get for your certain printers that are considered archival.
So if someone prints off a photograph at their home, or maybe they go to the local drugstore, this photo may not last as long as we'd hoped?
It will not last as long as you hope. I have a couple of prints made from what they call dye sublimation printing, which is an expensive way of doing it, where it pushes dyes into the paper. They've held up very well. But generally speaking, non-archival inkjet papers and prints, the ink, because they don't want it to clog up the nozzles, never really dries. It'll absorb moisture from the air on a hot day and release it on a dry day. And eventually the colors will shift and change, and they won't be around anymore.
Yes, and also it depends the surface of the paper, whether using dye inks or pigmented inks. Pigmented inks will last longer than dye-based inks, which will fade, just like color photography. A lot of color photographs are gone because they've just faded, but we're still left with these black and white photographs or snapshots that we find.
When they brought the photos back from the moon, you can imagine how carefully those were processed, because you couldn't go back that easily. They were stored underground, darkness, humidity controlled. Within 6 years, the colors were shifting on the negatives because color is unstable. Now, black and white's a different story. Black and white can be very archival. And for those who are really fanatical, it is possible to take three pictures through three different filters and then combine them. That's why you can still see pictures of Roy Rogers and Trigger that were photographed in the 1940s that look perfect. But again, the average person out there is not going to do that. You have to be an enthusiast or someone just really dedicated to preserving photographs. The average snap shooter out there, this is too much.
Linda? Yeah, so I would suggest if you wanted to keep photos of your family for a long period of time to make sure that it's printed on archival paper with archival inks and perhaps, you know, frame it or with a maybe a UV filter glass so it doesn't fade, or put it some kind of glassine over them and store them properly.
Mm-hmm. Worth the investment?
I would believe if your memories are worth
sure.
That.
And there are online labs and other places in photo magazines if you can't find someone locally that will do it. The nice thing is you send them a digital file. It isn't like you're mailing them the negative. And so it's not if it gets lost in the mail or the email, no big deal.
That sure. is great.
But there are some – and you got to really check them out and look for reputable sources in photo magazines and maybe talk to some of the professors what they use. Talk to other people who are involved in photography because it's a serious thing. I mean, this is something that the average person someday is going to wake up and go, where'd my pictures all go? And also, if they don't know how to transfer files from one place to another, which is a computer problem, they're in trouble.
Are people making photo albums, family photo albums, like they used to? I know personally I'm not printing off pictures as much as I used to, and I kind of miss that.
Well, actually, some of my artwork deals with old family snapshot albums that I find at flea markets and thrift stores without the photos in them and some with the photos in them. So they're discarded. I don't see many photo albums, although people are making photo books
sure.
online.
Sure.
If you can find a photo book that uses some kind of relatively archival process, that's a good idea. I have this enormous collection of mugs from my travels for the past 30 years, and they're taking up way too much space. And I'm going to photograph each of the mugs and put them in a book because I don't really need to have the mug. It'll save me a lot of space.
Linda?
You know, I was just thinking when you were talking about how you couldn't get the CDs, the laminated CDs, to be read, mm-hmm. and they were just sort of...
They're gone.
The information is on the CD, but it can't be read. It's almost like the roll of film that hasn't been developed, the latent image that's in that roll of film. You have the photos there theoretically on the CD or in the storage unit, but you don't have access to it. So I guess you can hold up an old hard drive and say, here's my family vacation, but you can't access it, just like a roll of film that you've taken on your vacation that you haven't developed.
Yeah, it's very correct. We're in a very transitional time. Things have not ironed out yet. We're learning how to take pictures, but the flip side of the coin, how to keep them, they still think there's the shoebox of negatives someplace, and there isn't. And if you accidentally erase your photos in most cases, or I had one case of a very nice person who took a once-in-a-lifetime trip to New York, and somebody had played with the camera and had set it on the golf swing mode, which was like 30 tiny little pictures onto one frame, and this person took all the pictures that way and then came to me saying, how can I make this better? And the answer was, you can't, because you had your camera set wrong. You know, it's really sorry. It's really tough.
Well, maybe we'll start to appreciate or value more the experience of our vacations as opposed to the photographs that we take. Yeah, or you see how people communicate. They sit next to each other, texting either each other or somebody else. But they're spending time together, looking at their screen. And the idea that you're imaging your world or your experience constantly, what does that do to someone? Mm-hmm. Or what does it do to someone if you don't have any photographs of your youth? I have a friend, she has one photograph. And she's talked a lot about that one photograph and how significant that she only had one from her childhood. So I think that's interesting, too.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Jack Socha, a photography instructor and author based in La Crosse, and Linda Levinson, a UW-La Crosse Associate Professor of Photography. We're talking about digital photography. One of the last things I want to get into is this idea that with the shift from film to digital photography, that it could be affecting the historic record down the line. I'm wondering if it's something, Jack, I know you've thought a bit about this. Do you want to talk about that?
The only thing I've heard, and this was someone told me it was on the History Channel, was that historians are really worried about people erasing the bad photos, the so-called bad photos for the future. And I tell people in my class and also in the book, I said, don't throw away the picture, especially based on what you see on the little thing on the back of the camera. because there may be some detail in the photo when you see it larger you may want to keep. Or maybe 20 years from now, you'll look back and say, oh, look, there's Fluffy, that our dog, you know, who's no longer with them. Or look at that carpet. Or look out the window. There's the car that ran on gasoline. You know, there's all kinds of little things going on. And people keep throwing this away.
Just because someone's eyes are closed in the photo.
Yeah, or they, well, no one will ever want to see this picture. Yeah. And maybe they will.
Well, photographs are documents, and they're indicators of time. And if we can't access them, then we may not be able to see what fashions were 50 years ago or what architecture was. You know, Atje, who was a French photographer, spent 20 years of his life documenting Paris in the late 1800s, early 1900s, made 10,000 images with glass plate negatives. And they're still used today by architects and by other photographers and by artists to see what Paris was like.
I saw something in some report that at one time in the late 1800s or early 1900s, when people were using glass plates still, that if the shots were not very good, they would sell the plates of glass to gardeners who would make greenhouses out of them.
Mm. Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
And they would discover this greenhouse sitting in the backyard that is filled with photographs.
That sounds like contemporary art.
Yeah. But, I mean, also they could recover them and then restore them and find all these found photos again. So something will happen. Something's going to happen. There will be a demand where the average photographers rise up and say, what do you mean I can't get my pictures off this media? And as you say, as long as there is a profitability to be made, someone will be able to do it. The question is whether people will want to spend the money.
And time,
yeah. All these people come to me, how can I get my slides onto the computer? I said, it is laborious.
Yeah.
It is time-consuming and laborious. And either you're going to pay someone $2 a piece mm-hmm. to do it, or you're going to do it yourself. It's just hard.
It's true. You hope that digital photography will make things quicker or a little bit smoother. But in fact, I spend more time editing and making sure all my devices are in sync with each other before I can even get to work.
I don't think the average person realized when they were using film how much stuff was done behind the scenes to fix their pictures. And also the chemistry, the resilience of color negatives was much wider than a digital camera. So they could grossly overexpose or underexpose and still get a halfway decent picture, which could be further corrected when they were projecting the negative onto the paper. All that's gone now. It used to be you press the button, we do the rest. And now it's you press the button, and you do it all.
Is there anything that you want listeners to take away? Are we doomed, or are we in a good place?
No, I don't think we're doomed. Oh, we're in an okay place, but I think people need to slow down and question and look and start to evaluate the images that they're making, or ask themselves, do I really need to photograph everything in my life? When should I be taking the picture? When should I put the camera down? Do I need to have it with me all the time? Or do they value, face-to-face interaction? Or do they want to document their experience?
Linda Levinson is an associate photography professor at UW La Crosse. Jack Socha is a photography instructor and author based in La Crosse. Today, we are talking about digital photography. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews and photos by Jack and Linda. And if you'd like to comment on our program or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. Next time on Newsmakers, local government officials are in the midst of developing their budgets for 2014. We'll get the latest on some of the budget challenges and opportunities, and what it could mean for taxpayers from La Crosse City and County officials. That's next time on Newsmakers.